good evening once again, everyone out there in the listening land. This is John St. Germain broadcasting live from Chateau St. Germain in Knoxville, Tennessee. And my goodness, let me tell you about the storms we're having here. We are having storms indeed. And may I tell you how bad the storms are here? We've got power outages all around us in this little island of sanctuary we have here. We do still have power. However, we may be subject to the power outage at any moment. I am broadcasting from a landline, which means that we still may still have landline service and the show may continue uninterrupted. But if we do have a power outage, I'll lose my internet service and lose the studio from which I control all aspects of the show, including audio files and phone calls and the dashboard. Also, the circuit board, the phone lines which are operated behind the scenes, by the way, by Gladys, the genetically modified bonobo who punches in all the calls. So we may lose that. We may actually lose all that. And if we do, I'm going to attempt to continue broadcasting from the landline, and I'll put some music on and then attempt to reconnect to the studio, the dashboard, and everything via cell phone. So we may have an exciting time tonight should the power go out. I'm very excited about tonight's episode. This is part four and conclusion of the long and circuitous discussion of relationships. And tonight we're going to look at some various psychological topics and mystical and spiritual topics of relationships, mostly how we can prepare ourselves better to survive and cope with the stormy and tumultuous landscape of having a relationship. And we're going to segue from there into some spiritual topics. And then next week we're going to step back and talk about mediumship, about contacting spirits and also contacting living beings using crystal ball projection techniques. We're also going to cover that in the newsletter, the March newsletter. The February newsletter, which will be coming out in about a week. So stay tuned while we listen to a little bit of music. And everyone, grab a warm drink and grab a warm person or a warm cat or a warm dog or a warm lizard. And let's take a small musical break and come back, and we'll have our weekly prayers. So join us. It was either him or Insane Clown Posse this week, so I took the lesser of two evils, what can I tell you? And I'm just in that kind of mood this week. As you know, the Crystal Silence League is a prayer service that was founded around 1917, for those of you who don't know this, by Claude Alexander Conlon, a very interesting man who lived a very interesting life. and it was founded to be a prayer service for those who needed positive and affirmative thought. And back in those days, it was run mostly by postcard. They would mail them to him, and he would bring them out into a public forum, and he would lay his crystal ball upon them, and he would pray over them. It was revived a few years ago by members of the Independent Missionary Spiritual Church and became an online service. And, of course, prayer is always free. You go to www.crystalsilenceleague.org and post your online prayer. Of course, you can join the Crystal Silence League and have additional rights and privileges thereunto. And also, you can get a couple of books. If you remember, you get one of these books free. We have two very good books written by the founder, Claude Conlon: Crystal Gazing, Lessons and Instructions in Silent Influence with the Crystal Ball, and Personal Lessons, Codes, and Instructions for Members of the Crystal Silence League, that will teach you advanced methods of crystal gazing. And, of course, there are four methods of crystal gazing, not just crystal gazing for means of clairvoyance, but also for healing, for projection, and for attraction, etc. And many people don't realize that mediumship is not only speaking with the dead telepathically, but also speaking with the living as well. And we're discussing that in the newsletter this month, and I hope you do subscribe to that newsletter on our website. So, this week's topic that we'll get into in just a few moments, we'll be winding up our four-week discussion of relationships. But first, of course, we're going to do our prayers. I call a few prayers of the many, many hundreds, and sometimes thousands of prayers we get every week. We have over 6,500 subscribers to our newsletter now, and many thousands of people who post prayers. So, these prayers, I call a few, and we pray online to help distribute the positive and powerful energies generated by our members from the Crystal Silence League. So please join me in praying for the positive people. I identify them only by prayer number and by initials, and sometimes if the initials are too obvious, I even change that. But the prayer, nevertheless, has a great deal of power. So let us do that now. And the first prayer is prayer ID number 35023RE, who prays for the power to ditch her craving for alcohol and to think clearly. She wants to free herself from the chains of addiction, and may that come true. And may all people who are wrestling with this terrible addiction place it aside. Prayer ID number 35022, RE, who wants to have her car fixed as well. Prayer ID number 35021KL, who prays for her cousin-in-law, M, who's been battling breast and cervical cancer for 5 years, and may she heal from this terrible disease. May all people suffer from cancer be healed. Prayer ID number 35020KL, her friend AJ be healed of a brain aneurysm. Prayer ID number 35019KS. She's had a crush on a guy named V, and she wants an opportunity to go out on a date with him. May that come true. Prayer ID number 35018KL prays for job security. May she find a secure job soon. Prayer ID number 35017CF needs help with his business and finances, and prays for a group of clients to call and for finances and wisdom in the business. May that come through for him. Prayer ID number 35016KR prays for family and finances and for the court success in the court case. Prays to be rescued and spared, and let the case end in her favor. Prayer ID number 35015TD needs a big increase in income and miracle money. May that come soon. May it come through. Prayer ID number 35014TD needs a big lump sum of money. Prayer ID number 35013WW has a friend coming up for surgery on the 19th, and please pray for her friend Jay going through another surgical procedure to remove the remaining part of a cancerous tumor. May you come through with that with strong healing and good spirit. prayer ID number 35012, HG, has a plumbing problem. Her toilet is broken, and please pray it will be a quick and an inexpensive repair. Prayer ID number 35011, RS. Please pray for RNN and guide the relationship so that it grows long and heads toward marriage and grows love, loyalty, and respect. May that happen. May it come true. May their relationship be wonderful. Prayer ID number 35010, HG. Her multiple sclerosis is progressing, and please heal her of that. And pray for healing from this awful disease. She cannot walk, and she's so tired. Please may she be healed of that and gain strength. Prayer ID number 35009, AS. Prays for love, for soulmate, and for happiness. Prays for the Archangel Camuel. She's asking for her help from up above to unite her with her soulmate, IS. Twin hearts so full of love. Please may they be united. May their twin hearts be united. Prayer ID number 35008, HP. She's having problems from a broken relationship, and she's felt bad, unattractive, and alone, and she wishes to regain the vitality she once felt. Please may she be restored and feel attractive again. Prayer ID number 35006, again, HP, needs her call volume to pick up so she can afford a trip to see her dad and her friends. Prayer ID number 35005, WW, is praising all the great spirits, praising God, and thanking everyone. Apparently, she posted a prayer request, and her friend did not commit suicide. May the spirits and may the great one be praised. Prayer ID number 35004, MR, prays that everything will be made right in her relationship. Her partner, Jay, are trying to work some things out, but it's being very difficult. May that be made well. May their relationship reconcile. And prayer ID number 35003, TS, needs all removal of curses and all blockages removed. There's blockages between her and a man named D, and please may those blockages be removed in the name of all good spirits. May all curses and all blockages be removed between them. Prayer ID number 35002. She needs protection from danger, has an enemy, and may the black snake that she dreamed about be destroyed and removed. May this come true. May all healing energies wash over her and remove the black snake from her energy and her life. Prayer ID number 35001, CR. She has a court case, and may the judge favor her on February 18th, which is tomorrow, and add the two-year-old son to the restraining order. May that happen. May the judge rule in her favor. Prayer ID number 35000, JR. She prays that, Father, heal me completely. Heavenly Father, I cry out to you. Forgive all my sins, but deliver me from the devil's bondage, ugly thoughts, mind. Take complete control of myself, body, thought, soul. She prays furthermore to heal her mind and body completely. She says she has become very weak mentally and physically. She has no more strength. Please give her the strength to bear this burden, this physical, this mental, and this spiritual burden, and that she comes out of the other side healed and restored. Prayer ID number 34999, MB. She wants to fight her depression, and she's been feeling very badly lately. There's negativity between her and Z, and she wants to feel much better. Please may her spirit be restored. And finally, prayer ID number 34993, KBH. And her friend is finally well. Her husband are parting as friends, and she are parting as friends, and she's got a nice apartment, and she wishes to thank everyone who has prayed for her. The Crystal Silence League is indeed a very powerful force, and quite often, and very often, the prayers are answered, and many, many, many people find that their prayers and their lives are healed by the healing power of the Crystal Silence League. Well, thanks for joining us this week. I'm John St. Germain, and this is the Crystal Silence League Hour for the next, some time now, it looks like. It looks like we have a lot more time than I planned for, 1 hour and 14 minutes. We seem to have got more time. We're going to talk about all sorts of things. What I'd like to do right now is get the Stone of the Week out of the way. I always talk too long, and then the crystal heads that hang out in chat always go, what about the Stone of the Week? So let's talk about the Stone and Crystal of the Week, and this week it is salt, this common salt. And I'd like to talk to you about the healing powers of salt and its magical uses. When you talk about salt, we're not talking about table salt, the stuff that comes in a container of salt. That salt has various things like iodine in it. Well, if you're going to use salt for magical purposes and for healing purposes, you want to get kosher salt or maybe even sea salt. You want to get rock salt, in other words. And salt is a very fascinating compound. I want to tell you, when I was in chemistry class, it was an interesting thing because we would mix hydrochloric acid and sodium hydroxide, and either one of these will destroy you. Sodium hydroxide is lye. It's the stuff you pour in your toilet. Disastrous to pour that on you. Because it would hang on, I must make a note here, a production note. It would be a disaster to do that, but if you mix these two together, you mix these two together, there's this puff of gas, and you wind up with salt water. The chemicals mix together, and you get sodium chloride and water, H2O. So it's a very interesting reaction, and it's cool. It's very cool when you see it. You pour hydrochloric acid and sodium hydroxide, and you get salt water. So I thought that was very cool in chemistry. So here you have salt, and I'm going to tell you, salt has memory, and that's why it works. That's why it works such cool magic. It has memory, so you can work magic spells with it. And salt has been used in religion and religious rituals since the beginning of time. It's sometimes used as a magical substitute for blood, where it's called for in old rituals. And now, I know apple cider has been used also as a substitute, but I found that unsatisfactory. And sometimes you can use fertilized eggs, and I find that sad. So salt is very good. And I'll tell you that in some magical rituals, it tells you to open your own veins and drip blood. And I just find that I'm too big a sissy, so salt is very good. So with magical rituals, you draw pentagrams with salt, you draw circles with salt, and it's very good. It's a very grounding material. It's used for cleansing. You can purify your gemstones with salt, and you can you just put your gems in a bowl of salt water, and you leave them there for a length of time until they're cleansed. For cleansing baths, you can mix salt with Epsom salts, or you can mix salt with hyssop, and you have a wonderful cleansing bath. The thing you do with that mixture of salt and hyssop is use it in a perimeter around your house, make a circle of it around your house for a protective and cleansing purpose. You can sprinkle that mixture in the corners of your house, in the corners of the room, as you recite the Lord's Prayer, and sterilize your house and burn away negative influences. This is a wonderful cleansing ritual. So I think that this is a wonderful mixture. I recommend this for a lot of people who can't afford to buy expensive cleansing preparations, or they're in a desperate situation and they want to work quickly. Salt. Now, salt does have a memory. Many materials have memory. Wax has a memory. Salt has a memory. So many crystals have a memory. It will remember the emotional state that you have. So it can ground you quite a bit. So if you want to focus your energies, carry a bit of salt with you. And there's money attracting spells that use salt. You can form a pentagram with salt, and you want to get some money attracting stones and put one on each of the five points. We've discussed this. You can use tiger eye, jade, opal, pyrite, lodestones and put them on the tips of the pentagrams. And every time you do this, you concentrate. You know, you're here to attract money for me, stone. And then you burn candles. You burn candles in the middle of it, and you know, work your spells. And then at the end of the candle burning, you gather up the salt and the stones and the drippings from the candles, and you carry them with you in a green bag. So salt can be used to cleanse. It can be used to attract spells. It can be used to protect you. You know the thing about putting a salt circle around you when you're protecting yourself from negative energies and spirits. So salt's a wonderful thing, and we'll be talking about later on salt used in some love attraction spells. That's very cool. Somebody's asking in the chat, can salt and house salt herb in place on window sills? Certainly, yes. Anytime you want to protect, use salt and house salt to protect and cleanse. It's a blessing mixture. Another herbal bath is you mix an equal portion, say half a cup of salt, half a cup of Epsom salts, and blend it with some hyssop and use it for a cleansing bath. You can mix it with the bath water and or mix it in a bowl and pour it over you. And as you pour it over you, you cross it off. You cross your arms and cross it off and say, "I cast you off," and cleanse yourself. And follow some of the other rituals. There's other rituals involved, but that's not the topic of this discussion. You can find many cleansing bath rituals online or from materials that you can get from our sponsor, Lucky Mojo Curio Company. So our topic tonight is relationships. We're winding that up. We're talking about some odds and ends. And what I'd like to discuss, I suppose, at this point, as we wind this up, is how to fortify yourself and prepare yourself for the rather difficult business of having a relationship. If you're in the business I'm in, spiritual advice, psychic readings, spiritual counseling, you deal mostly with relationship issues. And a lot of times you'll find people get into relationships and then they get in over their heads. You know, you bring baggage. And you find that when you're in a relationship, there's good and there's bad. And it's very easy to be in a relationship as long as it's going well. You know, when you have the hugging and the kissing and the shared experiences and the good things. But then conflict arises, and that's when you really are tested. If the relationship is going to survive, you have to have strength of character. And this is where, really, in a relationship, the rubber meets the road. And whenever you talk to people in counseling, you always find that there are defects or flaws or incomplete development of character that ends the relationship. This was brought to mind to me today. I was talking to somebody, and I said, the biggest problem in relationships, I think, with you is that you're in a good relationship. You're good with casual relationships where there's your heart's not involved. But when you get in a serious relationship, you break up over something like the way they chew their food. The way they chew their food or something like that gets on your nerves, and then you break it off. And it's never about chewing the food. It's never about how the, you know, squeezing the tube of toothpaste in the middle. These are excuses to avoid intimacy. And that fear of intimacy is what breaks up more relationships than anything I can think of, you know, that's not utterly dysfunctional. You know, like violence or, psychopathology or character dysfunction, that fear of intimacy. You sabotage your relationship because of fear of intimacy. You know, you say, well, you know, we don't share an interest in badminton, so, you know, we're not meant to be. We don't like foreign movies, so we're not meant to be. It's a sabotage tactic because of a fear of intimacy. And so what I would like to talk about, I suppose, is this whole idea. And so to strengthen character, it's very simple. There's actually rules for this that psychologists have studied. And one of the biggest things is discipline. And when I was a child, nobody told me what discipline was. They told me I needed discipline. I needed to be disciplined. And when I thought about discipline, it meant, you know, getting your ass whipped, you know, getting a belt across your ass. But that's not what discipline is. That's punishment. And I began to realize as I grew older that discipline is focus. Discipline is focus, focusing. And the discipline has aspects. And these aspects are the ability to delay gratification, accepting responsibility, a dedication to finding out the truth, to finding out the facts about things, and balancing conflicting responsibilities, equally attractive or demanding responsibilities. And I found out over time that this is what is taught in Buddhism and what is taught in many psychological models. So let's talk about those. The chat room is buzzing away. They crack me up. So delaying gratification basically means that you choose pain over pleasure for a greater benefit. You sacrifice your pleasant comfort for future gains. And so delaying gratification is when you choose pain over pleasure. And when I looked into this, apparently most people learn this by the age of five. 5 and 6 year old children will, for instance, eat their cake before they eat the frosting. And children will finish their homework first so they can play later on. Most children learn this. However, a great majority of adolescents seem to lack this ability. Because the very problematic students in school are totally controlled by impulse. Their impulse have poor impulse control. These are the youngsters who indulge in drugs. They get into fights. They find themselves in confrontation with authority. So we have many problems with impulse control. And if you have problems with impulse control, your relationships are going to be train wrecks. They're just going to be train wrecks. So delaying gratification is an important skill, not only in life but in relationships. And I'm going to propose to you that a relationship is a model for reality. How you handle your relationships is how you're going to handle reality the rest of your life. How you comport yourself in a relationship is how you comport yourself in reality. That's going to be every aspect of your life. If you cannot succeed in a relationship, you're not going to succeed in life. Remember what we're taught by Mr. Conlon. Internal states manifest externally. And if you can't develop intimacy successfully one-on-one, you cannot develop intimacy successfully on the greater scale. This I completely believe, and I want you to think about that. So it's only through taking responsibility and accepting that life is hard. That's Buddhism 101, life is hard, that you can solve these problems. So this brings you to the idea of neurotic behavior. There are two aspects of this. Neurotic people assume too much responsibility, and people with character disorders deny responsibility altogether and blame everyone else. So there's a saying in psychology that neurotics make themselves miserable, and character disorder people make everyone else miserable. Now, the idea is this: everyone exhibits neurotic behavior sometime in their life, and everybody exhibits character disorder at some point in their life. But the idea is to get balance, and balance is the fourth skill that I mentioned. You handle conflicts by balancing them. You have two responsibilities: work and home. You know, say you have work and family. And they're equally pulling at you. How do you balance them? A lot of people don't. They put work before family or family before work. How do you balance those? Or let's say this. Say you're married, you love your wife, you love your husband, but then you're really attracted to somebody else. A lot of people don't balance it. They have an affair. That's very unskillful. How do you balance that temptation, that attraction? How do you deal with that? Handling conflict requirements. How do you do this? These are very responsible things. Acceptance of responsibility. You accept responsibility for your own decision. Every decision you make, you accept the consequences of the decision. If you make a bad decision, you accept the consequences of it. You don't try to escape the consequences of it. If you make a mistake, you admit it, you accept the consequences. That's part of discipline. The dedication to truth. This is the capacity to look at the world and change your beliefs when you're presented with fact. This is very difficult for most of us. You update your worldview when exposed to new information that's discordant to your old worldview. Psychologically, say you had a bitter childhood. You had a terrible childhood in a very bad environment. This will leave you maybe with the idea that the world is a hostile and dangerous place filled with monsters that are just out to get you. Now, suppose that if you go out in the world and you're exposed to more positive aspects of the world, your worldview is challenged. But many people will still defend it. They'll just say, well, you know, people are pretending to be nice to get something from me. Now, it takes a lot of courage to challenge your belief and say, well, maybe the world is not a hostile and violent place. Now, if you're raised in a really happy family, you know, like the Brady Bunch, where everybody's supportive and kind and happy, you'll go out in the world and think that the world's a supportive and happy place with just full of opportunities and the kindness of changes. You know, Blanche DuBois in Streetcar Named Desire, she depended on the kindness of strangers. I'm not sure where I am. I think if somebody said, John, would you depend on the kindness of strangers? I would say, no, absolutely not. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle there. I would not depend on the kindness of strangers. I would be very suspicious of the kindness of strangers. So, although I don't believe that the world is populated by monsters, I would say the world is filled with dangers and hazards. But also, there's nice people as well. What I've learned about the world is that you do have to watch yourself. You do have to know how to take care of yourself. That would be my worldview, and that's because I've been exposed to information that teaches me that there are some people that will kill you, and there are some people that will give you the shirt off their back. So, dedication to the truth means that you may have cherished beliefs that you have to challenge and change when you're exposed to new information. Studies have shown that there are people who are reluctant to do that. That when confronted with that people have beliefs, like there are people who are sure they know what happened to Kennedy. They know what happened to Kennedy. They know who really shot Kennedy. Even when confronted with proof that, no, it wasn't a conspiracy. You know, it was not UFO aliens combined with the Illuminati that killed Kennedy. They say, no, it was. And there's a psychologist, Barry Sullivan, who has done a lot of work on this, and he says that when people have formed the theories on their own, with their own reasoning and their own structure, they will defend it vigorously, even when shown how absurd it is. You'll never see more proof of this than when people watch a magician and come up with a theory about how it's done, no matter how absurd it is. I remember watching, I think David Copperfield levitate a woman, and some guy was saying, well, that's done with magnets. And you can't levitate a human being with magnets. And furthermore, you can't suspend someone in midair with magnets. Magnets pull things toward a pole. You can't suspend. It takes an enormous and complex, and this was back in the 70s before they had that device that vibrated at a million times a second where you could have a steel ball in midair, but you could not do it with magnets. And but you see people, you couldn't convince this guy, no, it's not done with magnets, that's absurd. Or they make a woman disappear and he goes, well, there's a mirror in front of her. Well, that doesn't work either. But you see people jump to these theories and they'll defend them to the death. But, you know, you know people like this. They know exactly what's going on in Washington. They know that Obama's birth certificate, he was really born in Iraq or whatever. the Fox News thing. And, oh, by the way, I have a list here, a list. And of everything that you've missed on Fox News this week. You know, I go to the doctor's office a lot, and they play Fox News quite a bit. So as your humble scribe and proponent of the truth, I've got a list right here. Do you hear it? Of everything you've missed on Fox News that you should know. I'm going to read it to you. Okay, that's it. So now we've had this this difference between neurotic suffering and legitimate suffering. Neurotic suffering is when you substitute a pseudo-suffering for legitimate suffering. Legitimate suffering is when you, I guess you could say, agonize over the four aspects of discipline: delaying gratification, accepting responsibility, your dedication to truth, and balancing responsibilities. You do that so you can resolve the many conflicts and puzzles of life, right? And but neurotic suffering is when you agonize over nothing. When you agonize over too much responsibility, I'll tell you that it's a very good way to put this is that neurotic people think that they have to keep everyone around them alive, that they're responsible for everyone around them, and they keep everyone around them alive. And the character disorder people blame everyone else for everything that's wrong with them, that everyone else around them is responsible for keeping them alive. You see the difference? Neurotic people think that if, remember we talked about codependent people and passive people and aggressive people. You know, codependent people think that they're keeping everyone around them alive, that if they're not responsible for them, everyone around them will suddenly drop dead. That's neuroses, that they're keeping everyone around them alive. So that's just some of the things we have dealing with that. So what we have going for us here, if you can keep this in mind, that in relationships, there's responsibility, there's the idea of sacrificing, delayed gratification, the idea that you're working for the relationship, not for your immediate gratification of pleasure, that you're working toward a higher goal for the good of the relationship, that you're looking for the truth, not idealizing each other, not putting each other on a pedestal, the truth. What is the truth about the person? And loving them for the truth, and balancing responsibilities, not taking on too much. That's neurotic, remember, not taking on too much of the responsibility, and not blaming the other person for what's wrong with you. Do you understand this? And that applies to everything in life. The model of the relationship applies to everything in life. If you can't succeed in the relationship, you're not going to succeed at work. You're not going to succeed in anything in your life. And this leads us to the idea of spiritual development. Because once you get past the idea of basic human skills, that's just being a human being. You know, you don't get credit for that. That's just being a human being. This is just basic adulthood. You know, there are things that you do. If you get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you shave, you put clothes on, you put deodorant on so you don't stink. You don't get credit for that. You don't get a gold medal for that. You know, you don't get, oh, you're a good guy. You know, you're a good person. You got up in the morning and got out of bed and brushed your, you know, you don't get credit for that. It's not, no, you get a gold medal for that. That's just what you do. You don't get credit for being responsible and, you know, being considerate of other people. You don't get credit for that. You know, you don't get a gold star stuck to you for that. That's just being a human being. That's being an adult. That's growing up. This is not stuff you get credit for. You shouldn't be pat on the back because you can get along with other people and show them responsibility and show courtesy for other people. We should not have to be taught how to. You're not taught this in school, though. They don't teach you how to be a human being, how to be courteous and responsible. They send you away. You know, somebody acts out, they're fighting, they're unhappy, they're miserable, they're stuck in infancy, they're infantilized by poor rearing. They just send them away. They put them on Ritalin. They send them to shrinks and say, you know, this is a problem, and it is a problem. We have children raising children, and no one teaches any of these skills. So we have spiritual development, and how do you develop your spirit? In this age, people seem to think it's cool to be hard and rational and not believe in the mystical. But again, this has been broken down. So we have, let's say there's four stages. There's probably more, but let's just look at four stages of developing spiritual development. Stage one, when you're a little kid, you defy, you disobey, you don't accept that there's any will greater than your own. Very narcissistic, egotistic, you lack empathy. Now, this is how children are. This is just the way children are, but many people never outgrow that. Again, remember, defy, disobey. You don't accept that there's a will greater than your own. You are the ultimate will. You're the god of your own world, egotistical, self-centered, no empathy. Many criminals are people who've never grown out of this infantile stage. Stage two is when you begin to have sort of a blind faith in authority figures, and you see things in black and white. There's good and evil, right and wrong, us and them. Now, at this point, this is when children learn to you learn to obey your parents. You learn authority figures. Now, often there are tools that you use to do this. There's guilt, fear, shame, fear of punishment, and they reach stage two. Now, many of the people, so-called religious people, are stage two people in the sense that they have blind faith in God, blind faith in authority. They have fear of punishment, that God will get them, they'll be cast into hell. They don't question his existence. They don't question the inerrancy of the religious texts. Now, with the blind faith comes humility and a willingness to obey and serve, and the majority of good, salt of the earth, law-abiding citizens never move out of stage two. They never move out of that. Now, stage three is a stage of skepticism. It's questioning. And this is where a lot of rationalists and scientists are. Stage three people don't accept things on faith, but they have to be convinced logically. They're examiners and questioners. A lot of the people that work in scientific and technological fields are stage three. However, a lot of skeptics are stage two. They've made skepticism their religion. They have blind faith in science, and they deny anything outside of science. So sometimes a lot of people who seem to be stage three, skeptic, science, logic, are still as rigid in their skeptic approach as a religious fanatic. They are religious fanatics, but they're science religious fanatics. They don't believe in mysticism. They don't believe in spirituality. They don't believe in anything they can't measure. They are as committed to blind faith as they are stage two, but they do it in a different way. They accept their religious books, their science texts, their physics texts. They believe their religious books and their religious figures, that their religious figures are Carl Sagan, Stephen Hawking, Richard Feynman, Niles Bohr's, not Moses, Jesus, Muhammad. Okay, you see the difference? But stage three is scientific skepticism and questioning, and they don't accept things on faith, but they accept them if convinced logically, and they reject the existence of spiritual or supernatural forces since they can't measure them or prove them scientifically. And some of them do retain spiritual beliefs, but they move away from official doctrines. They move away from fundamentalism and dogmatism. Now, moving through these stages, you can move through these and then enter stage four. And this is where individuals start enjoying the mystery and beauty of nature and existence. They get this awe-inspiring. Einstein did this. Einstein went into this mysticism of nature and existence. They retain skepticism, but this individual may start perceiving grand patterns in nature, and he or she may develop a deeper understanding of good and evil, forgiveness and mercy, compassion and love. They see something greater than just the logic and the somewhat dispassionate relentlessness of nature. His religiousness or spirituality may differ significantly from a stage two person in the sense that they don't accept things through blind faith or out of fear, but because of a genuine belief in the pattern of goodness of things. And he doesn't judge people harshly or to seek punishment or to inflict punishment for their transgressions. In other words, sin is not a concept. This is the stage of loving others as yourself. You truly see yourself in other people. You lose your idea of ego, your attachment to your ego, and you forgive everyone. And these people are the people that we label as mystics. And the people, there's a very good book called The Experience of Transcendence that discusses this in great detail. And I've read this book a number of times, The Experience of Transcendence, by Near, a guy named Near. And according to this fellow, the transition from stage one to stage two is sharp. It's like bam, bam. But the transition from stage three to stage four can be very gradual. You almost don't even notice it. You go from a kind of scientific investigation of reality into this awareness of mysticism, this transcendental state. And it's a form of what in Buddhism is described as sunyata or emptiness, an idea that there's no true separation of things, and it's an extremely wonderful thing. You just lose a sense of ego. You realize that there's a great interconnectedness of phenomena. So that is just a wonderful state to be in. So we love that sort of thing. We love that. So what I'd like to do is just discuss just a few ideas that. About this whole idea of love. If we work on ourselves as an individual and we don't become neurotically obsessed with another person, we find that the more we work on ourselves to become a better and finer and honorable and honest and stronger person, the more the relationship is forged into a finer and stronger and better thing. And the more we accept the idea that life is hard and that relationships are hard, and we don't try to run from that, the more we realize that the relationship grows stronger. And the more we understand that to accept the idea that we're going to open ourselves to a relationship, that's the same thing as saying we're going to open ourselves up to the possibility and the probability that we're going to be hurt and accept that, the more we're going to open ourselves up to the idea that intimacy is going to open up mysticism to us and worlds that we'll never ever realize without it. And so how absurd is it that we are afraid of being hurt? And I've discussed this with so many different people. That fear of being hurt stems from childhood. That's when you're a little kid and you lose your bubble gum. That's the fear of losing your bubble gum. That's what you're afraid of. And I'll explain that. Back when I was doing a lot of 12-step programs, in the 12-step program, there was a fellow I knew named Jake, and he said, "Well, you know the bubble gum theory there, John." I said, "The bubble gum theory? Tell me about it." He goes, "Well, when you're a kid, you lose your bubble gum. That's the worst thing that ever happened to you. You cry and you cry and you cry. That's just the worst thing you can imagine until you lose your favorite toy. Then it's the end of the world, man. That's the worst thing that ever happened to you. You can't imagine anything worse. Until you lose your best friend, you lose your playmate, then that's the worst thing. It's the end of the world. You can't imagine anything worse until one of your parents dies. Then that's the worst thing you can ever imagine. Until you grow up and, you know, maybe you fall in love and then the person you fall in love dies, then that's, you can't imagine anything that hurts you worse. Until later on in life, you die." And he says, "It all starts with losing your bubble gum." He says, "That's the bubble gum theory of grief." And that was profound. You know, this old drunk redneck. I'll tell you something else he told me here in a minute, but that's true. I think that's the bubble gum theory. What you remember is that first loss, how bad it hurt you. But, you know, his idea was that each thing you lose in life – prepares you for the next loss. You know, it gets you stronger. You know, you lose something small, you lose something bigger, and there's some wisdom there. So what happens, I believe, when people are afraid of, they get in a relationship, they're afraid of being hurt, it's infantile. It's an infantilism. The idea is that there's that childlike part of you that's afraid of losing your bubble gum. You know, you're afraid you'll fall in love, you'll be intimate with somebody, you'll open yourself up and you'll get hurt, and that you'll be like that little child. But, you know, you're an adult now, but I think there's a part of us that doesn't believe that doesn't fully comprehend. All of us as adults, we faced rejection. We faced a lot of that, but we just don't understand that. There's a part of us that emotionally does not understand that. It doesn't realize that we can deal with that. We can survive that. You know, we're still afraid we're going to lose our bubble gum. There's a part of us that thinks this is the worst thing that could happen to me. If I open myself up and get hurt, I won't survive it. It'll be the end of the world, and it won't. It really won't. It'll hurt, but it really won't destroy you. But there's a part of us that just does not believe that. And so, if you enter the mystical state where you truly empty yourselves, you can do that, because I truly don't think you can let another person into your heart and mind until you reach that state where you're able to empty yourself. And then you can truly listen, you can truly hear, you can truly feel that other person. You know, otherwise, I think you're projecting yourself onto that person. And the relationship becomes you projecting your needs onto them and expecting them to understand this and meet them. And the minute they don't, you're disappointed, you're hurt, and you say, oh, I don't like the way they chew their food, so this isn't the real thing. And the only way that relationship, I think, is going to work is if you enter that relationship empty of expectation and unafraid of losing your bubble gum. So that's a very simplistic theory, but the bubble gum theory, I've always liked it. The other thing he said, he had these messed up ears. They actually looked like wads of bubble gum stuck to the side of his head. He was this old gnarly guy. He was a ex-alcoholic street guy. He was full of platitudes and things. If you're in a 12-step program, there's lots of platitudes. So he said, you'd say, Jay, what happened to your ear? He goes, well, I was drunk and I was asleep in my chair. My wife was ironing her clothes and the phone rang, and I reached for the phone, but I grabbed that iron and answered it and said hello and burnt my ear. And he said, well, what happened to your other ear? He goes, well, some bitch called back again. You know, so there's one for you. He was full of stuff like that. It was pretty funny. It was funny at the time. It's an alcoholic joke. If you've ever been in AA or something, there's tons of stuff like that. It was pretty funny when he told it, because he looked at you like he was very serious. But, you know, there can be no true intimacy without risk, and there can be no success without risk. So as I say, the model of the relationship is the model of reality, dealing with reality. If you want to be successful in life, you have to be successful at intimacy, and I agree that. And whenever you seek to avoid the responsibility for your own behavior, you're going to try to give that responsibility to someone else. You're going to blame another person. You're going to blame an organization. You're going to blame the president. You're going to blame the weather. You're going to blame God. You're going to give responsibility to some other entity other than yourself. And do you know what my mom used to say? She said, that's why people get married, to have someone else to blame. My mom used to say that. And there is a great deal of truth in that. So there's really only one way to solve your problems, and that's to solve them. So you have to give it your full attention. You really do. You cannot truly solve anything unless you give it your full attention. You gotta get off Facebook. You gotta get off tweeting. You gotta get off these meaningless things, and pay full attention. If the relationship means anything to you, you got to give it your full attention. And, you know, we know more about problems and dysfunctions and why they work and why there are problems and the background of problems than we do know about health. We know more about sickness than we know about health. There are more books, more articles written about sickness and disease than there are about health. I could talk to you all day about all the stuff I've learned about sickness and disease and dysfunction and psychological problems. I could probably talk to you about an hour about everything I know that I've been able to learn in my lifetime about health. But the one thing I do know about health is that you got to take responsibility for yourself, and you can't blame anybody else. And I know that if life were easy, we wouldn't be strong. And it's only because of the problems and the difficulties of the world that we grow into being spiritual and strong human beings. They don't go away. Problems won't go away. You can't run from them. You got to work through them, or else they stay there. And the only way you're going to avoid relationship problems is to avoid relationships. You know, and good luck with that, because they're everywhere. And so, as this program comes to an end, I want you to think about this. Everyone is very special. You're very special too. And if you look at the course of human history, the entire course of human history has inevitably hinged on one person. You go through history and you see the course of history has inevitably been changed on one person, the solitary mind, the solitary soul, the solitary decisions of one person. And if that person had had a change of heart or a change of mind or refused to confront a problem or refused to face that idea, good and evil, good and bad, refuse to interact with the relationships between that person, that himself, herself, and the world, if that person had decided to stay home that day, the entire course of human history would have gone a different way. Napoleon, Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, Harry S. Truman, Adolf Hitler, we can go back in history, Caesar. Any of these people, had they acted differently in one moment of their life, had they had a change of consciousness, had they had a change of mind, a change of heart, a change of spirituality, if their parents had had a change of heart, a change of mind, of spirituality, the entire course of human history would have revolved around a pivot. Jesus Christ, Muhammad, Joseph Smith, the Buddha, any of these people, a single change of consciousness, a single change of decision, a solitary thought, a solitary moment, the entire course of human history would have changed. Everything would have been different. You're no different. I'm no different. None of us. A single thought, a single change. So until you value yourself, until you value your time, until you value your decisions and your responsibility, there'll be no change of thought. And remember, whatever happens in your mind, whatever happens in your mind, whatever happens in your heart and your soul, manifests in reality. That's what we believe. That's what we believe in New Thought. And it's true. So, study. Reflect. Do your concentrations. Do your meditations. Look into your crystal ball. Project it outward. Receive. Be diligent. The very last words of the Buddha, take them to heart. All compounded things of existence are impermanent and subject to decay, and seek your own salvation with diligence. And this is John St. Germain. This is Crystal Silence League Hour. Do come back next week, where we'll study mediumship, telepathy, and clairvoyance. And thanks for hanging in here for the four-week relationship program. We're just about out of here. And stay tuned for In the Streets of Beverly Smith, a wonderful program. And we'll see you next week.